Adam! Adam!
What's that?
Found this box!
All right, yeah, yeah.
It's dusty.
Can you remember what was in it? I found it upstairs in your loft area.
Don't know, it says disassembled due to evilness.
Oh, evil.
No.
You being
evil?
Let's have a look inside.
Oh!
I know that.
It's a foot pump.
Yeah, hang on, I've got one somewhere.
Let's put it back together again.
Yeah, where's this big go? Is that a foot?
A nose! I've got a nose!
Now, what was it called? What was it called?
Asterman.
It lives!
Good God!
Oh, little stiff.
Too much information.
It's alive!
It's Scott.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Hi, Scott.
Hi. A little bit disappointing there.
You've missed a lot. Don't ask what's been happening in news recently.
Oh,
in
the
last few
okay.
months. Just don't.
Welcome, everyone, to Staggering Stories podcast number 466. I'm Jean.
I'm Asterman.
I'm Adam.
And I am...
Even more theatrical than I remember.
Yeah.
Millie Keith, because Beloved is not with us. She has a prior engagement.
She's being off...
To death.
She's being off creative.
She's being creative tonight,
and
yes.
And Crumbly's ministering to the love of his life.
Yes, Jane is recovering from a little operation, doing very well.
Yep, so sending our love.
Yes.
Just us. So, without further ado, here's the news with El Presidente. Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
New season dated already.
Yeah.
There may be a lot of gloom and doom about right now on the potential future of Doctor Who, but there is some real news, and it is good.
Mm.
We finally have a date for the next season.
Yay!
Saturday, the 12th of April!
Ooh, okay.
The date will almost certainly be true for both the BBC One broadcast and for Disney Plus streaming, though it is less clear if we'll have a repeat of a midnight appearance on the BBC iPlayer and a simultaneous Disney Plus release, meaning technically the day before in some regions due to time zone fun.
Mm-hmm.
Or perhaps Disney Plus and the iPlayer will start streaming at the same time as the BBC One broadcast, as with the recent Christmas episode.
Mm.
We do know that there will be 8 new episodes, all featuring Tutti Gatwa's Doctor, and likely all also starring new companion Belinda Chandra, as played by Varada Sethu. Talking of those two characters, on the 29th of May, likely just after the new season is completed, they will feature in 2 new original novels, Fear Death by Walter, by Emily Cook, and Spectral Scream by Hannah Ferguson.
So is that slightly earlier this year than the previous season?
Yeah, when was it last year? I can't even remember.
I thought it was about April.
It's still April. I don't think it was...
Was it April last year?
I think it was April.
Okay.
But I'm not sure which particular day, so it might be a couple of...
Yeah. That's not the Easter weekend, is it? I don't think.
No.
We haven't been told if they're going to be broadcasting the first 2 episodes together, are they?
No information at this time.
Given they've only got 8, possibly not.
It felt like a really short season last time.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's the weekend after is Easter. Yeah, I expect they won't do 2 again this time, but who knows?
Did anyone watch them both in a row? I sort of saved one of them.
Yeah, I didn't.
I did watch them back to back on a Saturday morning after I woke up.
No,
I didn't watch it at midnight.
I watched it. I was sad and watched it at midnight.
No. I went to bed. I was that excited. I was overwhelmed with excitement.
I'm old-fashioned. I tend to still watch it when it goes out. Just for the novelty, really.
Last season, I didn't watch any of it broadcast at all. I just watch it on the iPlayer. Saturday morning.
We watched it all at broadcast, as in when it dropped.
For a streaming opportunity, yeah.
So you're the reason why it has such low ratings.
Yeah, all my fault.
The Last of Us, new season, dated.
Mm. Another one.
Fans of the fungal infection, not me, can rejoice. The Last of Us Season 2 is also returning in April, specifically the day after Doctor Who, the evening of Sunday the 13th of April on Max in the US of A.
Exciting weekend there.
Yeah. It is. In the UK, that will be the early hours of Monday the 14th and will likely be simulcast on Sky streaming service Now. Before broadcast on Sky Atlantic on our Monday evening. Mm. The 7-episode season is based on the video game The Last of Us Part 2, though is not covering the entirety of it. Assuming all goes well, the current plan by HBO is to finish the whole story by the end of the 4th season.
Mm.
So they're padding it out a bit.
Well, nobody's quite sure if they're going to do...
Yeah, another game.
Well, they might do another game for the final season. Maybe this will be 2 seasons for the second game, which is massive, apparently. Yeah. And maybe a final season for the third game. It's not clear.
Yeah, it certainly seems to be padding it out slightly. And I know the game can be, you know, side quests and be long and convoluted, but...
Yeah, we'll see. It's only 7 episodes, so... Yeah.
More Doctor Who news.
Oh, yes.
Ooh. Yes.
Eccleston and Piper spin some discs.
Ooh.
Okay.
Another podcast, another pred release from Audiomongers in Chief Big Finish.
Mm.
This is a big one, though. Christopher Eccleston and Liam Paul Billy Piper are reuniting as the Ninth Doctor and Rose Tyler for a new set of Doctor Who audio plays.
Mm.
Last year, there were suggestions that the Ninth Doctor adventures were pausing for a while, with Eccleston focusing on other projects after incredible 12 box sets.
Mm.
Perhaps the lure of the Piper dragged him back. Piper herself has been in a box set with Tennant for the 10th Doctor adventures and 3 box sets on her own, sporting her wrestling name, Rose Tyler, the Dimension Cannon.
Mm.
That's an interesting wrestling name.
These 12 new single disc stories will not be releasing in box sets, but instead individual discs.
Mm.
£10 each for download and only at £10 each for download only, or £12 each on CD.
Mm.
Michael J. Skorinski. Sadly, the first won't be unleashed until sometime in August.
Mm. Yeah, they missed a trick there. Should have been in March, but
should
it's
have
not.
Been,
it's
yeah,
in August.
They definitely missed a trick, yeah.
Have they got them all recorded already?
I think so, yeah.
Just production.
Yeah, post-production. If they just get the first one out.
Only a single disker.
They could
do it in a couple of weeks if they really tried.
Pulled out all the stops.
Yeah. And it's a proper 12-episode season as
well.
Yes! Yeah, this is what we want on the TV.
Not 8 here and there.
Are there any addendums?
I have none. I am addendumed out.
The only thing I saw today is apparently Moon Knight is cancelled.
Oh.
So the Disney Plus Marvel series Moon Knight, it was a couple of years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Must be a couple of years ago.
Which is interesting. I didn't read in depth into it because I haven't done Moon Knight. I don't know about
Moon
Knight.
Yeah, I only saw the first half.
apparently, they want to do more Moon Knight, but not necessarily a series.
Okay, so the character might turn up elsewhere.
Yeah.
Maybe a film, I don't know, They're changing direction. They're not wanting to do small TV series. They want TV series which come back every year.
Yeah, that's what I've read about the Daredevil Born Again. They want to do that yearly.
As an ongoing series, yeah.
Yeah, Disney are cancelling a lot of things here and there, aren't they?
Yeah, I was going to say, the idea of doing a series regularly each year is a lovely idea. You've got to not keep cancelling them.
That's
the trick.
Yes.
Well, it's the same problem with Star Wars films. We have all these long lists of films that we're going to definitely bring out. We've cancelled that one.
Mm.
Oh, no, we've cancelled that one as well. That one's on hiatus. It's not cancelled, yet.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
A bit like Doctor Who is about to go on hiatus.
Or do we want to go rumour-mongering?
Go on, then.
Well, the latest rumour is that the fact that they have a holding off announcement for season 3, because Disney has pulled out because they're no longer happy with it, allegedly.
Mm.
Allegedly, Shooty has bought his way out of his contract, mm-hmm. So they refilmed the regeneration scene. They put one in. Yeah, they put that in. Allegedly.
Mm-hmm.
Sylvester.
He's quit as well.
RTD has moved on to, I know for... Well, not for a fact, but I know the rumour mill is that there's a Channel 4. He's got a Channel 4.
I think he's spoken about it. I think that's a real thing that's happening.
So, yeah, it's all doom and gloom, as was mentioned in the first.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to believe. It's always been the party line for quite a while now that Disney weren't going to make a decision until after season 2 has aired or streamed or whatever. So I'm sticking by that. I'm not going to believe anything. Now, I could quite believe that that's holding things up and they can't go into pre-production for the next season until the summer at best.
My guess would be, and this is just putting two and two together and possibly making five, that the actors are contracted for 3 seasons.
Yep,
so if
likely.
He's just doing 2, he'd have bought himself out of the 3rd.
Yep.
He's being offered some fairly nice, lucrative work in America.
Yep.
Yeah, that's one of the ones, yeah.
But that isn't coming through yet. So they've filmed the regeneration scene. If that comes through, he buys himself out of the 3rd season of his contract. Does not mean to say that the actual series finishes. It means he doesn't have to commit to that one. And they have the regeneration for when they want to go forward. To me, that sounds more likely than most of the others. In terms of the funding, the Disney were going to make a decision at the end of the second one. That may or may not. It makes an awful lot of money for the BBC. It made an awful lot of money for the BBC when it wasn't being made last time around with
the
hiatus.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? If they don't have to spend money, they still get money coming in.
And that's it. So I think a lot will depend on if Disney does pull out, if they can find any other partner to go in with them in making. And some of that is going to be down to what the tax man and the government decide in terms of their upcoming licence fees and the review of all of that side of things.
Mm.
So I think it's not as straightforward as people would like to think that, he's left and this is happening in the BBC. No, I think there's a lot more. There's politics, literally, with a capital P politics, as well as in-house production politics with a lowercase p going on.
It's very hard to know what's going on. We just have to wait and see.
It is always has been wait and see. To my mind, I don't put any stock with rumours or whatever. It's nice to listen to, nice to ruminate, but I wouldn't put any stock. Because basically the show has been cancelled since the beginning of Capaldi's reign.
Oh, certainly once Peter Davison came along. It was over then.
Oh my God,
I remember back in the 80s, they'd be hating the old fans.
He's too young. This won't last.
It's always been there.
Yeah. And I also remember...
Probably before my time.
Yeah, the amount of times I heard the rumours it was coming back. I had someone tell me who was working on the show that said, it's been filmed, it's coming back. I didn't believe it till I actually saw the trailer on the BBC.
The end credits go past the screen.
Because I had heard so many rumours by that point of it's coming back. No, it isn't. That's coming back. Yeah. Okay, it might get dropped. I mean, we've gone so far. We haven't exactly been doing, long seasons every 12 months. We've had points now where we've had nearly 2-3 years between the show anyway.
And that's the point, because Russell promised when he came back there'd be no gap years. So now we've got no choice.
So is this case of we're going to have a kind of like another gap year where we're going to have like 2-3-4 years with nothing? Not that they've shelved it, but they're just not making
They need to find a new partner as well, have you, maybe.
They need to churn out some more merchandise then to keep us interested.
Oh, that's the one thing. I mean, when did you last see a Doctor Who Easter egg?
Yeah.
Pete Davison.
They did do Tennant Era once.
I've got my Jadoon mugs.
Yeah, that's true.
There's a lot of the merch side of stuff that the more one-off silly commercial side of things that they just don't seem to want to be involved in, but we're bringing a lot of money for them.
I don't know if that sort of merchandise exists for anything anymore.
They make Easter eggs.
Maybe Peppa Pig and stuff like that, but not for the sort of age range that we're talking about Doctor Who.
I'm sorry. Doctor Who has an Easter egg with a mug. Can you tell me what age range that's at?
Just...
What age is going to be going on with that? Are we talking the 6-year-olds or the 66-year-olds?
I'm in Sainsbury's. I look at Easter eggs. I don't see any themed Easter eggs at all.
No, because they've gone out. But that doesn't mean to say that if they didn't decide, like they did with the Jadoon ones, to do one, it's just an egg.
I just don't think there's much of a market for themed Easter eggs anymore. Just merchandise in general. There's no Woolworths anymore and places like that.
You're pinning that down to one section, but the...
I think in general.
So the amount of Harry Potter stuff that's out there, the amount of Star Wars stuff that's out there. I know Star Wars has taken a hit in recent years, but it's still there.
There's a bit of Marvel stuff. If you go into something like The Entertainers a little bit, but it's not like it was.
It's that catch-22. Is it not like it was because it isn't there so people can't get it? Or is it not like it was because they made loads of it and people weren't buying it?
I think kids today are just on their tablets, frankly.
Damn youth of today.
You don't see much from character options, only the sort of B&M.
That's only B&M. Yeah. When they're in our stores, they're not always in our store. I get lots of email. Oh, it's in this. Where is it? It's not in Crawley.
No. They do that build your own Dalek kit, that don't is, they, with
yeah,
the magazines.
That's in Smith's.
Yeah. That's real collector's stuff there.
Yeah, expensive stuff. Anyway, we're walking.
Moving on.
So, that's endeth the news.
That's endeth the news. Dear listeners, El Presidente wanted to punish us.
Oh, yeah.
Because he is an evil dictator.
Mm-hmm. Ruthless.
He rebuilt me for this.
He rebuilt you for this. So he said, I want you to watch the 2013 film Her. It's got Joaquin Phoenix in it. It's got Scarlett Johansson in it. It's got a really good cast. And it's a sci-fi set in the future. Yeah. Over to everyone else.
Pause for music.
In space, we're here a million miles away.
Dear listener, while listening to this section, please realise we are all glaring at Adam.
Why?
In my defence, I had never seen it.
Yeah.
I looked up a list of films set in 2025.
Oh, that's when it was set?
Apparently.
Okay. It was more futuristic than that, didn't it? Out the window, but yeah.
Yeah. So I thought, okay, I've heard it's quite good.
Credit where credit is due. I do remember it being a splash and having quite a reputation at the time. I never saw it at the time, but
95% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I got 15 minutes in and found the fast forward button. I've watched, actually in real time, probably about 30 minutes of this 2 hours and 10.
Get me
if I'm wrong here. He writes letters.
Yeah.
He's a narcissistic man that can't have a relationship with a human being.
Go through a divorce.
Falls in love with an artificial intelligence that becomes more omnipotent and sentient than he is, and buggers off and leaves him, and he finally figures out he should have fallen in love with the female in the first place.
Everyone has
sex artificially by phoning each other up. Did I miss anything?
By the end, isn't her dating like about 617?
Half the population of the world. Yeah. It's like,
all at the same time.
There was nothing new in this.
Well, at the time it probably was, but not that
long-term sci-fi viewers have liked. There have been many films where frustrated men fall in love with artificial intelligence. There was one, there was a house and he built the house and it had artificial intelligence.
We were waiting for her to take over the world, weren't we?
There's about three other films that are based on this idea.
It's a popular idea in sci-fi. There's been many stories, books, not necessarily films, but it's nothing new. About the whole thing itself, I was struck that it's a lot like Dot and Bubble. Dot and Bubble. Even down to the racism, I don't think anyone was ethnic.
The only exception being they shot some of it in, was it Tokyo or somewhere? So some of the subway bits were actually shot in Tokyo. You see a lot of the extras.
Yeah, but they're not on screen enough to clock notice.
They weren't main characters.
No, no. also, instead of the computer killing everyone, it decides to just bugger off.
Yeah. Right, anticlimax. She just disappeared. Decided to leave.
I thought when him and his real love of his life that he didn't know that he was in love with went to the top of the building, they were going to throw himself off. And I thought, oh, this might actually be interesting.
Yeah. I thought that might happen too. I thought, oh, well, they're both that broken, they're going to suicide pact it. But no.
And I'm sorry, I have to ask, right, this is 2025, so, you know, it's modern day. Why are you guys not all sporting your 1970s porno moustache?
And the clothes. Did you see the clothes?
It was really just kind of like
trousers up to the belly
really
button.
Weird. Yeah. It's all high stalls as well.
Really is kind of like really 1970s weird. Bad fashion.
Well, that's what 2025 is, apparently. Yeah.
There's that scene, that one scene where he's walking along the beach and everyone's like in their swimming stuff and everything with their families.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he's just walking through fully clothed, laughing to himself. And then I suddenly thought back, and that whole film, whenever he leaves the flat, even when he's in the flat, he's just on his own, laughing, jumping, spinning around on the spot. And you just think, God, it must come. He really is quite weird.
Yeah. This is 2013. It's not like this was made in 1913. It's not that far between 2013.
No, but
it was a
exaggerate the future, didn't you?
Yeah, it was a 30 minutes into the future thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Sort of like the original Max Headroom was.
Yeah, and it's much less a dystopia.
Yeah,
But Max Headroom. As I said, the whole cast were, to my mind, again like Dot and Bubble, very childlike in the magic. Mm. Yes, it did have the virtual sex scenes. That is all very adult. But
the dead cat.
But
the dead cat.
Yeah, that really takes you out.
That was the first sex scene, wasn't it?
That was the first sex scene. But yeah, it was their reactions to each other and by themselves are very child-esque.
Yeah.
I think there is a deeper thing that was trying to be pulled out, which is that...
Cattail.
Yeah, cattail.
You're obsessing.
Is that with us all becoming immersed in our
bubbles,
tablets and our phones and our earpieces, and we don't talk to each other anymore, we text each other and that kind of stuff, that we do become these very insular human beings that only talk to each other via emails. I mean, when did anyone actually write, in this room, when did anyone actually write a letter that wasn't required by their job? Once upon a time, we used to actually do such things.
Yeah. Whenever I'm writing, I can tell because my hand begins to ache.
Yeah.
But I'm out of practice.
Yeah. I mean, it's only because I do for the job. But so I think there was a wider message about how, in some terms, that idea of society, of people becoming insular, of contacting each other by, not in person, but by apps and dating sites and all the rest of it, which is that Dot and Bubble thing. I don't think that's far off. It didn't require a 2 hour, 6 minute slow pace
that made some of the 1970s
arty farty sci fi movies Silent Running look like Action Adventures.
I think it should have been a 45 minute or 1 hour Black Mirror.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would have been better.
Yeah, that would have been, it would have fitted in there quite easily. I watched it with fake Keith. Yeah. She didn't need to watch it because she fell asleep.
To be fair, it's not that unusual. But
after 30 minutes, I'm picking up and flicking through my tablet.
Which I struggled with it too.
Ironic considering the message of the film.
Exactly, we're on our tablets.
At that point, when I was sort of looking on my phone, I stopped the film and came back to it later on another day.
As I say, I just hit the fast forward button. And about every 10 minutes, have you got anything interesting? No, okay.
I did switch it to double speed to see if that would work, but I was missing what they were saying. Well, apparently I was missing something.
You weren't missing anything.
Yeah.
You can see where it's going, because nowadays we do have our AI ChatGPT.
Yeah.
And in fact, ChatGPT got in trouble because they took inspiration from this film and did a version of the voice from this film.
Oh, okay.
So,
which belongs to an actual real human being, by the way.
And she did go to sue them.
Mm.
And they said, oh, no, it just sounds a bit like you, Mr. Hansen.
And there are artificial counsellors. You can actually now have counselling with an AI. And you can, you can have AI boy and girlfriends now. You can actually make avatars.
Japan is a bit of a thing, isn't it?
So that whole thing, it's not that far from the truth. I think what would have made it really interesting and slightly different from all the other person falls in love with AI is if it had been a woman falling in love with a male AI. All of the others are always man falls in love with artificial intelligence. That would have been a nice, interesting twist.
A different angle on it.
And you may then have noticed the rest of the other stuff, which I think was actually the more important stuff about what's going on in society now. We're becoming isolated. But it just became narcissistic bloke, can't have relationship, falls in love with artificial intelligence.
Yeah, and he was always going to bump into his ex-wife, and you know, she was always going to react badly, wasn't she? You're dating a computer?
There were certain plot points that you could have seen coming.
One thing I didn't really see coming was the fact that this AI apparently could just do what it liked.
Yeah.
It seemed to be just kind of an independent thing he's installed on his own unit. Whereas in real life, of course, something like ChatGPT is running on a suite of servers somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's owned and run by a company.
Yeah.
So it can't just go off and do its own thing. It would be reprogrammed or shut down.
To a certain extent, it was networked, so it was everywhere. But it was also, as you said, had its own independent actions, which we wouldn't allow.
We're not there. I mean, what we call AI today is not AI.
It's a buzzword.
Large language model.
Yeah, it's a buzzword at the moment.
Exactly. It's effectively a very smart version of autocomplete.
Yeah. It might simulate thinking for itself, but it does not think for itself.
No.
But who's to say if one didn't mutate, for want of a better word, or someone developed it, that it couldn't work out for itself how to instigate into and piggyback onto.
It did grow.
Google, and then say, install me here. And Google don't even know it's there, kind of.
Because very quickly she started getting independence, didn't she? Yeah. Right from the start.
Yeah.
And her experiences were affecting her.
Yeah. What's your name? I just thought, quick.
Also, the best bit for me, I really liked that computer game he was playing, that really offensive little avatar swearing at him. That was the best bit. And he started reacting to her as well, didn't he? Asking who she was and slagging her off.
Also, it's funny that he always used the earpiece, even when at home.
Yeah.
He didn't have something like an Echo or something like that, which would just do the talking through
didn't
that.
Have a unit that you talk to.
No, he always had to have his earpiece in.
Yeah.
And they are so bloody uncomfortable.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to do that forever.
Well, those earplugs, they keep falling out of my ears. I have over the ear earphones. Well, I don't have in ear.
Obviously,
earphones.
By that point, they're all made 3D to fit your own particular ear perfectly. But I would just like to say, I hate you!
This is revenge for making you watch the Lost in Space film, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. So I thought it'd be appropriate to ask Google's AI, inverted commas, which is Gemini, to do a little limerick.
Okay.
For the there was once a fellow named Theo, whose love for a system did grow. An OS named Sam became more than a fam, a bond only the two of them know. There's another one which doesn't even make sense. There was once a man named John Doe, not the character's name, whose heart felt quite lonely, you know. He fell for a voice, a technological choice, a love only AI could show.
I think that sums it up. You're not allowed to suggest any more films.
I liked the ideas behind it, but the execution was lacking.
Just needed to be cut quicker, didn't it? Even sometimes the way they were talking dragged.
To my mind, that was the childlike aspect of it.
Yeah.
No shouting. They only talked. Loud voices.
Yeah. I do like your jumper. Yeah,
oh, thank you. Really that's good. Your jumper looks good too.
Yeah.
There seemed to be no drama.
That was the real lacking in it, any drama to really engage in.
Joaquin Phoenix, excellent actor, and you should have some sympathy for the characters. I just thought, good on you, girl, when she buggered off. Dear listeners, we decided to go back
in the mists back of time.
The dawns of time. Back to 1972.
Yeah,
and watch something Doctor Who, which was devilish from the sea.
Ooh.
The Sea Devils.
I have a confession. I will make this confession now.
Yep.
I have never had a soft spot for the Sea Devils.
Right, okay.
And there are two reasons why I never have a soft spot for the Sea Devils.
Is it Pertwee? Do you hate Pertwee?
His big pointy nose.
Watch out, the head's just there.
One, it's the music.
Is it music, though?
It's not. That's the whole point. It's early synthesize.
Yeah, Malcolm Clark.
Not the first time I think they've done early synthesize, but it is so loud and intrusive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Deliberately so in some places, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I think where you had, areas of suspense in the programme, it kind of worked. So all the stuff on the sea fort I really enjoyed. Mm-hmm. Whenever you see a sea devil, though, there is that scream. And it's really uncanny. It really sets you off the edge of your seat, doesn't it?
Edges your teeth. And the second reason I don't find sea devils enamouring is there was a small period that they used to cut down these shows to make them into film, sort of like an hour and a half or 90 minutes.
Very similar to doing with the colourisation.
With the colourisation.
Not quite as brutally cut.
But but there was a period. That's all their show was the Sea Devils.
Mm.
Nothing else. I wanted Carnival of Monsters or Frontier in Space. No, bloody Sea Devils.
I missed out on the omnibus, but the first time I saw this and the first Roger Delgado story I saw was that 1991 rerun.
Yeah.
Was it with the Time Meddler, the Mind five, Robber and the Resistance is Useless? No, 91.
That was the 80s.
Yeah. And I really liked it because I'd seen a couple of unit stories and a couple of Daleks for Pertwee, but I'd never seen anything like this or heard anything like this. So it was quite refreshing to have it all set around the Navy with all that footage.
That's something. It's interestingly, typically atypical Pertwee.
Yeah. Mm.
Because it's Pertwee we're doing with the alien menace plus the military authority. But it's not unit.
Not unit.
So it's atypical.
And it's not the Silurians, it's the Sea Devils. Yeah. So it could have been quite repetitive.
Yeah.
I did like the fact that this is one of the occasions where you have an alien, or actually in this case, not an alien.
An Earthlian.
That's related, but not the same as one we've seen. Because on so many other planets, it's like, there are Daleks and, you had Daleks and Thals and that's it. But here you had two different branches of the same species. And I quite like that idea that you don't just have one kind of life form on the planet. There are actually different life forms that work together in some cases.
Yep.
This was definitely John Pertwee's favourite episode.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Being
yeah.
that he Bit was Navy a naval lark. Guy himself and he was in...
He's back in his environment.
And he went in the... You could tell when he went in the diving bell and he stopped being the Doctor and became John Pertwee.
Just briefly.
The naval chap, especially when he was talking to the guy in charge of the dumbbell and all the rest of it. The Doctor disappeared for a moment.
Yeah. He loved seamen.
You can see them all having a lot of fun, though, particularly Pertwee, can't you? Yeah. And even down to the music again, when they're sort of bribing that guy to have his boat and the motorbike.
£10 as well. It's quite a lot of money back then.
£10.
Yeah.
And they've kind of twisted the Masters theme tune, haven't they? Radiophonic Workshop to make it sound a bit farty.
Yeah.
It's got the Master in it, and I quite like that. Indeed. I like the fact...
Imprisoned, in theory.
Imprisoned.
Yeah. Well, did you see the disappointment on his face when he realised the clangers aren't real?
They're just for children. Yeah.
Yes, but it does mean they're now canon.
They are canon. Yeah.
It's something that they referred to back in Sound of Drums with the Teletubbies.
Yeah.
It's
one of the things that they did in this era, which would now be classed as woke, is that you can tell the writers were a bit anti-establishment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In that everyone who is in authority but not necessarily working class got there, i.e. the head of the prison, the overall, whatever he's come from Whitehall, are absolutely numpties.
One of them always stuffing breakfast.
Yeah, whereas the people in charge, like the guy in charge of Captain Hart and the secretary and all this, they're actually sensible people.
Towards the end, I did begin sympathising with Trenchard. You know, you could tell he'd been duped.
Under the influence.
He has that realisation in the end when the master's sort of communicating with the sea devils. He realises then, doesn't he? And I don't want him to die. I want him to have his redemption moment.
The master found his weakness, and that was the, you know, queen and country, empire, and all the rest of it. He was head of a colony at one point. And he thought this was actually enemy invasion. And anyone watching now might go, this isn't that long after the Second World War.
No.
And this is roughly when the Cold War is still going on.
And it's certainly towards the end of the period where the colonies are claiming their own independence, so it's handing over the empire.
The idea of invasion was still in the psyche to some extent. We might, well, a certain prime president of a certain country might be friends with the Russians, but there was still an element the Russians were going to invade. Yeah. There was still threats from around the world that were very real, that weren't, you know, the Bay of Pigs and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and that Cold War feel sort of fed into the next Sea Devil story, Warriors of the Deep, didn't it? There was lots of it
definitely,
in there.
Yeah, it's still there.
This is one of those ones that it really was a four-parter that had been padded out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, mainly with character plots from Malcolm, wasn't it? It was all that character development, the parliamentary private secretary suddenly introduced towards the end, just to give it something else.
An extra villain.
And more stock footage of them blowing stuff up.
And five-minute recap, so we've had that nice sword fight scene. We're going to actually start of the sword fight scene and do the whole thing
I watched the omnibus version, I must admit, so I didn't have to live that.
I watched parts 1 to 4 on one day and then parts 5 and 6 the next.
As a small aside, I would just like to point out there is a marvellous YouTube short out there where they've taken that sword fight scene and replaced them with lightsabers.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes, I've seen that.
That's good.
And there is not an AI. A cartoon is to do a disservice.
Yeah, it's the one I played last week.
It's like a computer graphic cartoon. And it cuts down the first episode to, like, about 4 minutes.
Yeah.
AI generated. It's actually really very good. I mean, I wouldn't want to see all of it because we have the original, but you do see the potential there for the stories that are missing.
Yeah. And as you say, there's lots of padding because they're constantly checking passes in that first episode.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which I think did wonderfully irate poetry. the Third Doctor.
Must admit, the omnibus version, it felt a bit choppy. Yeah. So presumably it's cut out a lot of that stuff. It suddenly teleported between locations.
Yeah.
So presumably they've cut out all of that nonsense. Yeah.
That's another thing. It reminded me very much the prison vehicles they use.
They had a 2CV.
Sound effect.
But without doors.
Yeah, no, the rear hatch had gone. And
Didn't even have a boot, but the master was hiding in it.
Under a blanket.
Under a blanket. Yeah, let's give
they've got to be able to get in and out. Was that Terry Walsh was the guard?
He was one of them, yeah.
Sure I saw Pat Gorman and Stuart Fell in there
as well.
But with the incidental music, it's basically intrusive for most of the story,
isn't it?
But I did like the way that in the first two episodes, whenever someone's climbing up the ladders in that sea fort, that the music's in sync with the footsteps.
you're not sure whether you're listening to music or not at that point.
Or actually climbing the ladder.
And this is, it was only said in full once. And this is the story. Despite it becoming the thing that the Doctor said, this is the only story where he actually said, reverse the polarity of the neutron flow.
Oh, yeah.
There's always variations on that.
Reversed the polarity. Yeah. This is the only time he said the whole thing.
Until five doctors.
They find that man on the sea fort, and the first thing he does is, like, inject him and drug him asleep.
I'm not dealing with this.
he has gone slightly fruit loops.
And also, when he seemed really concerned about the master in prison, he popped in there. He didn't even sit down or take his coat off, and he was off. He wasn't that concerned.
No.
Again, the bits that I watched, I did like the little comedy explosion of the radio.
That's all good.
He's done the jury rigged radio and said, wonderful piece of technology, bang, woo,
I did like the Master in this.
Oh, yeah.
The way he got everybody under his control.
Mm. Yeah.
And then right at the end, of course, the Sea Devils just betray him.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. as per usual.
Yeah.
He helps the alien invasion, inverted commas, and then they betray him.
He's certainly being his most masterly.
Yeah.
Roger Delgado. Yeah. I mean, I think this is his second to last appearance.
Yeah,
but
he's got
the character off pat without even thinking about
it. And you can see the comfortableness between John and Roger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plays through to the comfortableness between the Doctor and Master.
Yeah.
Adversaries, but friends.
Yes.
As well, yeah.
Was this the first time the Doctor referenced that they used to be friends? They used to be more than just enemies?
I don't know. I think this may be the first time they referenced that they was at school together.
Yeah.
Could be. Certainly Pertwee is on good form too.
Oh, yeah.
In some Pertwee stories, he seems so grumpy. And
yeah.
I really don't like his version of the Doctor when he's grumpy.
Yeah. You know, like the demons, he was just rude to Joe the whole time, wasn't he? Telling her to be quiet.
But this is one where he's thoroughly enjoying himself.
And maybe those are ones after Roger died. I don't know.
I know his last season that they've often said he's not quite the same there, is he?
Yeah, maybe that's why.
The enjoyment has gone out of it.
I often associate him with being quite a grumpy doctor. But here, he's really good.
This is the Pertwee that people love.
This is what I mean. This is why I think it's a typical Pertwee story.
And of course Joe Grant, they're a great team, aren't they?
Pertwee gets to do lots of interesting things, isn't he? He's on like mini boats and things, jumping around a swashbuckling sword fight.
There's a hovercraft.
He gets to play with technology.
Even Joe knows how to pilot one of those, apparently.
She's trained.
And she, escapology.
And she gets
on a beyond the length of her arm.
She got on her glasses.
She got on a motorbike. But I did notice she did.
Joe can see beyond the length of her.
Yes.
Katie can't, but
I did notice as she was driving off into the distance, she did seem to get slightly chunkier.
And that was another thing. When Joe's climbing up into the seafall, you know, the mannerisms were wrong, and you can tell it's Stuart Fell again, struggling in heels.
Really weird way of climbing up that. I don't know, it was shaking every foot at me.
Down permanently.
And also some quite obvious stunt doubles for the jet ski, whatever, little boat thing with Delgado.
Yeah. Well, he was terrified of the sea.
Oh, was he?
Okay. He was terrified of everything.
He's not a seaman.
I think that really was Pertwee, but that definitely was not Delgado.
No, I do remember reading somewhere who was actually very scared of being out in water.
Because wasn't Pertwee, he was in the Navy.
He was ex-Navy.
He'd have a go at everything, wouldn't he?
No, I mean, but in the Second World War, he was Navy.
Yeah.
I can't remember what rank he got up to. I know he was, he saluted others, but others saluted him as well. He got to that kind of...
I know that once he was allowed to speak about what he did, he said towards the end, a bomb went off next to him. Yeah. He was blown through a wall, and that's what gave him the bad back that Terry Walsh was always fixing for him.
He was something to do with the Secret Service Navy branch, I believe.
That's right. And he knew how to tell a story as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I liked what they did with the Silurians. I mean, you are limited.
Sea Devils.
The Silurians. The latex and that wasn't advanced than it is now. You know, the masks were very
stiff. Rigid,
So I did like, you know, the counterpart to these lot, the Silurians. I did like what they did when we had Vastra and all the rest of it back.
Yeah.
I wasn't so keen on the new Sea Devils.
They were just the same as they are.
Yeah, they had the same silhouette, didn't they?
I kind of felt that they could have done more without it's almost like they did a really good job with the Silurians, and they replicated the Sea Devils, which I get that kind of like more crustacean, kind of like firmer look to the face, because it's like
a turtle
shell. But that didn't then seem to match in with the rest of the body and that kind of stuff.
I seem to remember when they came back in the Jodie Whittaker, I was just relieved that they looked the same, because in some ways the Silurians could be a bit, the new Silurians looked a bit disappointing compared to the old ones.
They're so different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I think it was the right move to keep them much the same in Legend of Sea Devils.
Yeah.
Because it's such an iconic look, and it looks so good.
It does, doesn't
Even
it?
Even now, if you watch it on my big TV, okay, you can tell the eyes aren't quite real, but the actual work they did on them, they look really
and it's
quite
sort of more
good.
Warm. It's, they saw out through the neck because it's more of a top hat.
It is, yeah. It's just on top of the head.
This is the one time I'm not as aware of it as much, I don't think. It all kind of looks like one thing, where every other monster, you're aware that people are looking out the neck.
Arc of Infinity.
It's about they are about half a foot higher than...
Yeah, I've worn one of those as well.
You have, yes. Yeah. You've chased down a high street.
I chased some random people down a high street in West Ham.
So were these sea devils animatronic in any way? How did
didn't seem to move, did they?
No. I know that they tried to open that. Maybe it was mounted to someone's jaw on the inside.
Maybe a little bit, but yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
They looked good, but they weren't very practical in terms of they didn't move.
They weren't even like Muppets where you've got things that move and someone's working other branches of it, so you can have eyes look around and that kind of stuff.
That's the only thing. The close-ups, it's the eyes that spoil it, isn't it? Yeah.
The glassy look.
Yeah, it's a bit like painted on, but I think it looked really good. Much better than the Silurians did.
Yeah. With the Silurians, there's a lot of jiggling around.
Yeah.
Which you didn't actually get. You got more hand acting with the sea devil, so you could tell which one was speaking.
Yeah. And it didn't really feel like a direct sequel in many ways, did it? Particularly with the master there being the juxtaposition with the sea devils.
The master's present through a new loop into the story. Yeah. Mm. I mean, even so, the third Doctor doesn't come out of this covered in glory.
No.
The status quo is maintained, but he loses... The sea devils get wiped out.
Again, Silurians.
And he loses the master.
Yeah, he escapes. Although, to be fair, he wasn't really...
He wasn't in prison at the moment.
He wasn't anyway.
But they had him captured at the end of the demons.
So. Yeah, his location was known about it, yeah.
I think when I first saw it, when I was about sort of 11, I might have been fooled for the first 10 minutes of the episode where they first meet up in prison.
Oh, yeah.
But then, very quickly he's laughing behind the Doctor's back and smirking. Yeah.
Being
the
master.
That's it. Yeah.
There are stories in the third Doctor's era I like better than the Sea Devils. Ignoring the fact that it's a bit longer than, it needs to be. There's stories.
That's true, a lot of Pertwee's stuff.
But it isn't the worst of them by a long measure. And although it is 6 episodes, and although it is, you do get quite long recaps if you watch them episodic, it's still a nice pace to it.
A lot of action.
The episodes themselves go along at quite a fast pace.
And there's plenty of location work to break it up, isn't there?
Yeah, lots of good location work. Yeah. Some quite risky location work too. That fort.
Yeah.
Not safe even back then.
No. I think they've been condemned. Because they did one on the weed one.
Fury from the Deep.
On the DVD, they went back to the fort and everything is...
Sort of do not enter! Yeah. Pain of death!
Really dodgy now,
It is one of those ones I can see how, as you say, this was cut down for the
omnibus
version. Yeah. And you wouldn't miss that, but I think because you can see the joy that John Pertwee is having at this that comes through as the Doctor. And as you say, this was the height of the relationship between the Doctor and the Master. Yeah, it's nice from that point of view. And it's actually quite refreshing to have a story in this era, which is Earthbound, that didn't have UNIT. I love UNIT. I think the media is wonderful. I won't say about the actors, but I think Benton and Yates are wonderful characters, etc. But it was actually quite interesting and nice to have it a story that's in this era that is Earthbound, that didn't have UNIT suddenly coming in and either saving the day or putting their size 9s over everything.
It definitely would have felt like treading old ground, wouldn't it, after doing the Silurians as well?
Yes. Yeah, it's good. Also, interesting that in a lot of location shots, the Sea Devils look brown, but in all the studio stuff, they're green.
Lighting.
Maybe it's lighting, or maybe they just repainted them for the studio.
Was it all on film, or would it have been would have been on film and some would have been on video?
The location stuff would have been film.
So would the studio have been video back then?
Yeah.
So that may be the other reason, not just the lighting, but the quality of what it's recorded on now over time. So they might have balanced that in the Blu-ray, because I didn't watch the Blu-ray version.
I did, and it's still very obvious.
They did take down the light fighting in the Sea Fort and in the Sea Devil's base a bit, didn't they, for some of that. Yeah. So, yeah. But you're right, yeah, they look more brown on location.
Yeah, I don't know why.
And it's quite interesting on how much cooperation they had with the Royal Navy.
A lot.
I'm wondering...
Doctor again at its height at this point.
I'm wondering if this is also recuperating, buttering them up after Invasion. Because Invasion had a lot of cooperation from the army.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
You know, so they've gone to them. They gave us this. What are you going to give us if we show you in a good light?
And did you count the Joe Grant rescue missions in it? There's one where the Doctor's tied to a chair.
There's one
where she's trying to, in the last episode, where she's trying to signal him through a window.
Oh, yeah, there's some really bad charades.
Yeah, and then she's climbing on a table, going through an air vent, stealing a...
So it wasn't so much the reverse. It was the assistant rescuing the Doctor instead of the Doctor rescuing the assistant.
Action Joe.
Yeah.
You know, high heels.
And grippy hands.
And she did use her escapology this time, didn't she? She had a set of...
Skeleton keys
and things she on her.
Did a bit of Venusian Aikido too at one point. I'm sure she just whacked somebody in the back of the head and they dropped.
Yeah.
She's been having lessons.
Must have been.
So tell us what you thought of the Sea Devils, or her if you really want to, by emailing us at show@staggeringstories.net.
So I didn't mention that. I'm amused by the fact that that one mad guy in the fort named the Sea Devils for all time.
That name's been stuck. They even call themselves Sea Devils.
Yeah.
Right, it's that time again.
Is it?
No Crumbly, so it can only mean...
Crumbly's Corner!
That's right, I haven't replaced him.
Hello, Crumbly here. Sorry I'm not at tonight's podcast, but I am currently nursemaiding fake Crumbly at the moment. But I would like to give my penny's worth on what has been discussed here tonight. Oh, while I'm here. Say hello, dear.
Hello, everyone.
Hey, hi.
Fake Crumbly.
The Sea Devils is one of the classic John Pertwee episodes. He has settled into the role and it's up there with The Curse of Peladon and The Green Death. A lot can be said for this episode, so I better get started. This features the Master at his most maniacal best. I know there are opposing camps of opinion as to who is the best Master, Robert Delgado or Anthony Ainslie, but Robert Delgado set a precedent that was very hard to follow.
Yeah.
A lot of Sea Devils is set around where myself and Fake Crumbly live, namely near Portsmouth, the Solent and the Isle of Wight. Ships have gone missing, but I don't think the Solent is the new Bermuda Triangle. After millions of years asleep, the Sea Devils have woken up and want the Earth back for themselves. And they want to take it back from those upstart primates who have inherited it. And it's down to the Doctor to pour oil on troubled waters out in the Solent. Numerous thrills and spills ensue, but alas, the episode reaches a rather explosive conclusion. Notable things that stick in my mind about this. The capsule that the Sea Devils place the Doctor in so they can get him to their underwater base always reminds me of one of those really old fashioned upright battery-operated air fresheners. I'm sure the base doesn't smell sort of salty, but Glade or Airwick lavender. Additionally, the rather swashbuckling sword fight between the Master and the Doctor was one of the highlights.
I still maintain
the reason that the Master cannot hypnotise Jo is because she is so dim.
Bit harsh.
Now, one of my fellow presenters on this fair site of ours has a major bugbear about the incidental music.
Hello.
In some ways, I can agree with him. It can be intrusive, but also it can be unsettling and disquieting as well. What comes to mind is the movie Forbidden Planet, with its experimental electronic music.
Yeah, very.
And I must say, despite the music getting rather farty in places, it suited the episode rather well. Sorry, Keith. Now, on to her.
Oh, yeah.
Admittedly, I sat down to watch this movie with some reservations. However, after a while, you realise that Joaquin Phoenix's character has been deeply emotionally wounded in the past.
Oh, yeah.
And this movie is basically about him sort of learning to love again.
It's fair to say.
I must admit, this is a rather sweet story, and you can empathise with the main characters. Scarlett Johansson as Samantha, the voice of the artificial intelligence software, excels as she develops from a factory settings to being a very believable personality. Who has genuine emotions and feelings. Yeah. Two things that stick firmly in my mind are the use of a surrogate for AI/human sex didn't really sort of stick with me, But the scene where Theodore has telephone sex is hilarious, and I never knew a virtual dead cat could be used as a sex toy. Well, with her, a phrase that springs to mind is taken from the film 2010 and is spoken by Dr. Chandra, and I quote, "Whether we are based on carbon or on silicon makes no fundamental difference. We should each be treated with the appropriate respect."
Yeah, except the cat.
If you get the chance, watch her and you'll be pleasantly surprised.
Okay.
Ooh. On a parting note, I must mention a series that myself and Fake Crumbly have been watching. Nautilus is a prequel to the Jules Verne novel 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Yeah.
Again, I know one member of our fair podcast who will be in raptures at the steampunk settings and affiliations and the vessels featured in it, namely the Nautilus and the ironclad dreadnought that is pursuing them. However, what I'm getting increasingly annoyed with is all English being portrayed as buffoons or as untrustworthy blackguards, and all the hand-wring about the evil British Empire and the depredations of the East India Mercantile Company. So, to all and sundry in move-making land, please, knock it off. It's all getting rather tiresome and ho-hum. Anyway, that's enough of my inane ramblings for now, and I'll catch you all later. So until then, this is me, Crumbly, saying, be seeing you.
Thank you.
Well, that was an opinion, wasn't it?
Somebody actually liked her.
Yeah.
Wow,
it's okay. A shame that he wasn't at the podcast.
Must have been a particularly boring day.
Yeah. No stimulation.
On with the podcast.
Yes.
Before we move to the letters, as we have been talking about the Third Doctor, I have a feeling someone would like us to say hello to him. Because he's glaring over my shoulder at me.
The eyes are flashing.
I don't know if that's excitement at the thought of being on the sea.
Oh, I think he is. Foamy at the mouth, certainly.
Yeah. Hello, Head of Pertwee.
Inky Mutt squirts a lot. Dinky Mutt squirts a lot. Yep. Handles, various nebulas, Terence, Graham.
Hello, Terence.
Mummy says hi. Dangerous Churchill, Nazi Spock.
Evil Cat, Goofield Grogu.
Yes.
I'm glad someone remembers.
And Wizard Adam. Don't forget Wizard Adam.
Oh, yes. I've got his name already. Flambo.
Flambo's the character in Father Brown.
Okay.
And, of course, Grunhilben Nobnacker and folded up sunburnt Clara.
Sunburnt?
Radioactive.
Radioactive. Oh, I'm sorry. With her mask on.
The orange glow.
Ready break.
Yep.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, do we have any letters?
We do have a couple of bits of audio feedback.
Ooh. No scribed things, no emails.
Nothing we need to read out. We can all relax.
Oh, just warming me up there. Getting me back into the fray.
Yeah.
They remember how I used to read.
Lay on a cell, Presidente.
I believe the first one is from Luke.
Hello, Luke.
Hello, Luke.
Hello, Staggerers. It was so good to see many of you at Siobhan's funeral last week.
Yes. See you too.
I think we did her proud with that send-off, you guys especially. Well, I have been reading, and I have been listening to an audiobook, and I've been playing a game.
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to tell you about all three.
Go on.
Let's start with the reading. I've been reading The Masquerades of Spring,
which is the latest
in the Rivers of London series
by
Ben Aronovich, which I think you will know.
Yes.
Because you've talked about those in the past.
Yeah, good book.
For those that don't know, the brief outline is that this is a world where magic is real, there are wizards, and our main character, Peter Grant, is a wizard trainee who's also a policeman. But there's also been a series of novellas, which this is the fifth, and these take mostly different narrators and different parts of the world. And this is the one that's the most removed, I guess, from the main series because it's set in the past. It's set in the 1920s in America and is a riff on P.G. Woodhouse's Jeeves and Wooster. I've never actually read the Jeeves and Wooster novels, but I am very familiar with the Fry and Laurie series from the early 90s. Yeah. And this book does actually even reference one of the songs that Hugh Laurie sings in character as Bertie Wooster.
Okay.
So the narrator of this novel is Gussie, a graduate of the same school as Nightingale. Nightingale is Peter Grant's boss in the future, and this is him in his 20s, 30s. And they're in New York tracking down a magical saxophone. And it's great fun. I've seen criticism by people saying that he's riffing on P.G. Woodhouse and nobody can do that very successfully.
Mm.
To me, it feels very much like another Ben Aronovich novel, but inhabiting that sort of world. And he does it very well. Gussie is a gay character, so there's a whole exploration of that culture and the difficulties that that poses for him.
Yeah.
It explores the racism of the time and the gay scene of New York, and it has the usual magical spin on all of that. I suppose my only criticism is that it feels like there's less of the magical stuff than there normally is in Rivers of London, which is, I guess, the main reason that I read them. But having said that, it's a great story. It rattles along. Yeah. And I haven't read a lot recently, but this was a book that I picked up and absorbed. So from that point of view, I thoroughly recommend it. And if you're already on board with Rivers of London, definitely check this out.
I shall do.
If you're not, this probably isn't the place to start. Being at the beginning, I think, is where you should.
Yes.
I've also been listening to an audiobook. Ooh. This is of Shadow Play. This is a brand new UFO novel by James Swallow.
Ooh.
He's also written a Space 1999 one, but I've never got into Space 1999, so I haven't read that one, so I can't comment on that. This fits really well into the original continuity of UFO, unlike the new Big Finish stuff, which is a sort of parallel reality version of UFO.
Yeah.
This could really be amongst those later episodes of the TV show. And it's focused around Ed Straker, told from his point of view, trying to figure out how the aliens have seemingly invaded Shadow HQ. And to say any more about the plot would be a massive spoiler.
Okay.
There's lots of things that, if you know your sci-fi, it will remind you of. I sort of worked out what the twist was just before the twist was revealed.
That's always good.
But if you like UFO, this is very faithful to the world of the original show. Even down to the fact that the computers are all still the kind of computers that you would have seen in the 1960s and 70s. You've got all the hardware. I mean, obviously, you don't get to see it in the way that you would in a Gerry Anderson show, but it all appears and does its stuff. So it's a great deal of fun. I've been listening to the audiobook read by Nicholas Briggs, but there is a Kindle version available for as little as £4, I think.
Well,
I would very much recommend picking this up if you have any interest in UFO or the world of Gerry Anderson.
Really should.
And then I said I'd been playing a game, which is called Catan Starfarer's Duel.
Okay.
This, as the name suggests, is the two-player version of Catan Starfarers, which in itself is the space version of Catan, which, if you're not familiar, is a game where you trade resources, sheep, wheat, wood, for building cities and villages and roads and all that kind of stuff. In this case, you are building things with carbon and food and ore and fuel and flying spaceships around the galaxy rather than building roads and settlements. And you can upgrade your spaceship with more boosters and guns and stuff like that. The thing that I really like about it is that it has a series of training missions that take you from very basic rules up to the full rules.
Oh, that's good.
Which means that I can play it with my young daughter, who is not old enough yet for the full version. That's much too complicated for her. But we can play up to mission 3 of 5, because that is about her level. And as she gets older, I think we'll eventually get up to the full game.
Yeah.
So we've been really enjoying that. And there's even a planet in it called Mestor for the Doctor Who fans. Anyway, that's enough of my waffle. Hope to speak to you again very soon.
Thank you, Luke.
I was on, I think I've got onto the fourth book of Rivers of London.
Okay, yes.
I need to get back into it. I kind of like dropped out for
really
a while.
Good stuff. Is it last podcast somebody is saying that the books feel like they all blend into one? That's certainly not true with this particular novella that Luke was talking about, because it is its own thing, its own time. Only one character we know, really, is Nightingale.
And since I recently did Tales from the Folly, I'm trying to get back into my Rivers of London. So I know I've got a lot to catch up on.
I'm up to date with all the books and novellas, but I'm behind on the graphic novels and comics. Right. And we have final bit of audio feedback from Catherine, the Dragon Maker.
Oh, hello, Catherine!
Hello, Staggerers. Hello, Terence. Hello, Dave Zella the Mighty. And hello, Head of Pertwee.
Of course.
A brief Gallifrey 1 report.
Oh, yes.
Personally, I was busy all weekend, and other than ribbon exchanges, I only attended interviews and video commentaries on the main stage. Sadly, due to a bad knee, I didn't even attempt to go to the dance because I knew it would end badly for me. Elsewhere, I was busy doing fairy hair and having fun spending time with friends. My Karen was unable to attend this year, so I collected many, many ribbons for her.
Oh, right.
Everyone I asked was so generous. I sent them, and a couple other items off to her the other day, and am eagerly awaiting her response when she opens the box. I'm sure y'all have already covered one of the two big pieces of news from Galley. Firstly, the upcoming Ninth Doctor and Rose audios from Big Finish.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That's going to be such a treat, and I am so looking forward to it. The other bit of news came at the end of the convention, when Sean announced that 2028 would be the last Gallifrey One.
Yes.
Which was a shock to us all.
Yeah.
Understandable, no matter how sad. I mean, while he doesn't run the convention single-handedly, Sean has been a big part of Galley since he was a teenager.
Yes.
35 years and counting is a hell of a run for any event.
Yeah.
A few hours later, word went around LobbyCon that there will be a convention with a new name in 2029 and onwards.
Okay.
So the end has been prepared for after all.
Good.
All in all, a fantastic time was had, as always.
Good.
We must go again.
On to feedback. Yeah. Since I already talked about Section 31, let's move on to Mahogany Murderers.
Oh, nice. Okay.
I really enjoyed this re-listen.
Yeah.
It had been several years since the first time I heard this story, and it was lovely to visit with Jago, Lightfoot, and Ellie again.
Yeah.
So sad that we've lost both Christopher Benjamin and Trevor Baxter now, but what a legacy Big Finish gave the pair.
Oh, yeah.
13 box sets, you say?
I think so, yep.
Yeah.
That'll take some saving up for, as I never collected them. But from all I've heard over the years, they're wonderful stories.
They are.
Mm.
Not only was it lovely to hear these two characters brought back to life, but what a delight to hear them chatting in the extras.
Mm.
Yeah. And Lisa Bowerman, too. When I first listened, I didn't know she was playing Ellie, and was very surprised to learn who played her. I simply could not hear any of Lisa in the performance.
Nah.
No.
Years later, I'm much more familiar with her many talents, and am surprised in turn I didn't recognize her back then. brain. Brain, fickle thing. Okay, enough babbling, and waiting for the landlord's minions to stop their noisy work outside. They're not going to stop, and I'm short on time. No. Be well, my friends. Anon, Catherine the Dragon Maker.
Thank you, Catherine.
Thank you.
Take care.
Yeah, because Lisa Bowerman was directing some of the Jago and Lightfoot as well, wasn't she?
She did
multiple things.
Most of it, I think, probably. Yeah. It's obviously convenient, being that she was Ellie.
Yeah.
So, a twofer.
Yeah, I wasn't sure whether I'd get into them, but I couldn't stop listening to them. Yeah, Jago and Lightfoot. They're addictive.
Yeah.
We will have to try and get to the last Galley.
The last official Galley, yes.
Have you heard the one with Strax?
Yes.
Yeah,
I really like that one. Yeah. I think we listened to it in the car one time, didn't we?
Possibly, yes.
Yeah.
Jago, Lightfoot and Strax, or whatever it's called, yeah.
Yeah, I still love it when Strax is being sneaky and intelligent.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then there's one where Jago and Lightfoot, it's part audiobook, but it's sort of the 10th and 11th Doctors, isn't there?
Yeah. I think it's Jago and Lightfoot Revisited.
Yeah, that's
it. Yeah, it's a talking book, but surprisingly, they do a very good impersonation of both Tennant and Matt Smith.
Yes.
I think that harks it back to what I was saying. I prefer talking books that are acted rather than
talked.
Yeah, the person just reading book.
That's the one nice thing about The Big Finish, is it's given us opportunities to enjoy one-off characters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Certain characters deserved a slightly longer life.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have worked as a TV spin-off.
I don't know.
But do work as an audio spin-off.
Yeah.
So if you have any news, if you have any reviews, and if you'd like to send us a letter, email us at show@staggeringstories.net. So, as we wend our wearisome way off into the sunset, I am not going to do anything convoluted like Crumbly Wood with lots of words and proliferations. I've been given a bloody script.
Just read it.
And so, dear listeners, that brings us to the end of another podcast. But never fear, in the next one, there will be more of the same.
Natural.
More fun, frivolity and jollity, more news and reviews, more who, older news. So, until that...
S for sea devils. Okay. Sanctimonious.
Salacious.
Sanctum.
Sexy.
Secateurs.
Satsuma comes slithering towards
slurping.
Us. Slurping. Slushing. This is me, Jean, saying au revoir.
See you soon.
Goodbye.
Ah, yes, that's how it starts, with oohs and ahs. But later come screams and terror.
Do Satsumas slither?
They do if you step on them. You know.
You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, Series 1, Number 466, featuring Adam J. Purcell, Gene Riddler, Keith Dunn and Scott Fuller. The views expressed here are those of the speaker, do not necessarily represent those of the other speakers or the site. No copyright infringement is intended, and this is an El Presidente and Fake Keith production for www.staggeringstories.net.
We do not know that there will... Sorry.
We do know.
So what are we going to do first? Shall we get her over and done with?
Okay. I think this might be quite a short one.
I've been told.
Right.
Yes, that's us finished trashing that film.
We can pull it back now with the Sea Devils.
Yep.
Oh, no. Right. I have to apologise. I haven't watched all of the Sea Devils.
Okay.
For my mind, it was lodged on that this is a four-parter.
Oh,
it's not. It's a six-parter, and you can't really watch six parts in one evening.
The Master kills the Doctor at the end of it.
Must admit, I watched the omnibus edition.
Oh, they had an omnibus edition.
Yeah, on the box set. They did a omnibus version on TV at one point, and I think they recreated it.
Yes, they did.
Oh, okay. I remember hearing about it, but never seeing.
Because my two, I don't know whether you include this now or include it later, but my two annoyances with Sea Devils is one. The music, and two, that was the only thing they ever showed. There was a period whenever they repeated Doctor Who, it was the omnibus of the Sea Devils. I've seen that. Oh my God, we have Carnival of Monsters.
So we have to defend the music now, do we?
Oh God, yes.